Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We we just barely got the phones out of here. You know, so sometimes when you get started, you go, oh, no, I'm starting, and I got these phones, because the last thing I want to do is have to hear a phone ring and or get to, it's easy enough to get distracted when a shiny object goes across the room. It's just like, oh, what's that? Anyway, let me move into what we need to talk about. We're going to talk about the scale of liberty as we have kind of wrapped up natural law. As you know, this show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. This is the only show that will actually walk you through the argument and help you understand what I think is the critical foundation of why we're in this mess. We've been fighting this struggle of liberty. As I cover this in the narrative, the historical narrative of liberty, we've been fighting liberty since the very beginning of time, since the beginning of this race here on this earth. And that's just due to the fact that there are opposites that, you know, exist in life. We cannot not have the negative without the positive or vice versa. And so if you look at the concept of the, you know, the creation, you know, the salvation of mankind, and, you know, the grand scheme of things, there has to be a negative. Now, when you look at, and so if you understand the two sides, then there is, there is an acceptance on the side of good, and let's say the negative side is evil. There is an acceptance of the existence of evil, and even though there is a desire to overcome all evil, evil will always exist. Negative and positive, both sides of this equation will always exist. It's a part of nature. You got the neutrons, the electrons, and so forth within structures, even magnetic nature. You've got positive and negative. And so with the grand scheme of things, when one looks at the negative side, they actually violate the laws of nature and the laws of science. They want to eradicate the opposite polar end so that only their side exists. And in so doing, they actually violate, like I'm asserting here, the fundamental tenets of science. You can't have, you know, the positive without the negative, or the negative without the positive. You can't. So, in other words, the necessity for both sides to coexist is always there. Now, when you look at the scale of liberty, just imagine in your head, you've got this linear box, and on the far left side, you see this white box. And if you want to flip this, I don't care. You'll see if it's on the right side. But on one extreme polar end of this, and it's not really a box, it's like this real elongated scale. It's like a ruler. And on one side, it's white, pure white. And then on the opposite polar end, it is pure black. So when you look at the white side, every time you move a little bit to the right, it turns a little gray, and it turns a little gray, and it turns a little more gray until eventually it turns black. Now, you'll notice that the nuances between the white and black are very subtle if you go just a small distance. But when you start going far enough, you can actually start seeing, you know, the significant changes. As a matter of fact, one of the things I learned a long time ago, and this is technology may have surpassed this, but there's 256 shades of gray. And I learned that in imaging because, and interestingly enough, the mind can perceive basically up to 16 different changes when you actually look at a scale from white to black. You'll actually see basically 16 different shades of gray before you get to black. And so as you kind of watch these increments of gray, what does this mean? Well, let's look at what the left side or the white side really means. The white side is the paradigm, the philosophy, the doctrine that all people must choose for themselves and make their own decisions and live based on the consequences of their decisions and be responsible for their decisions and accountable. Again, those are the fundamentals of liberty. So the left side or the white side is true liberty, embracing liberty at its fullest, where all people have to make their own decisions. Nobody can be dragged into doing something that they just don't want to do. They're not ready to do. They're not willing to do. They're not willing to commit. And so those people do not believe the compulsion is repugnant to somebody that believes in liberty. Now see, now I'm giving you this insight because when you start looking at people that you believe are real conservatives or champions of liberty, and then they start talking about ideas of compulsion, then you go, oh, interesting. So let's be clear. When a person chooses to be destructive and embraces compulsion and so forth, and they no longer become, let's just say, compatible with our society, then it is reasonable to expel those people. And as a matter of fact, if you kind of look at, you know, what we understand about our existence prior to coming here, that there was this war in heaven, well, what do you think that war was all about? Do you think that that war was all about, you know, a woman? Or, you know, because women have started wars, the Helen of Troy and, and others. Or do you think it may have been a border dispute? You know, how you're on my line, you're over my line, and you're intruding in my space. Do you think it was a border dispute? Because wars are caused by border dispute. Or maybe it was, you know, something really subjective, like, you know, somebody, you know, deemed a bad call in a sporting event. We've seen people go fist to cuff over sporting events. And I submit to you that I believe that that war in heaven was really about the fundamental tenets of what we're talking about, liberty and compulsion. I believe that we had an opportunity to, you know, kind of choose, or actually, I think the choice was made that we were going to come and have an opportunity to live in this world and have the liberty to learn of the truth and be able to choose it or not. Now, you got to understand that in nature, you know, these opposites exist. In sonics, opposites exist. You got high frequency and low frequency. Their characteristics are very, very different. High frequencies are very directional. Low frequencies are omnidirectional. And so as you start looking at all the different opposites that exist in nature, you can start recognizing that they are extremely different. They're wired different when it comes to people. And this is what we really want to help drive home. We want you to understand how the people that we're dealing with are wired so differently that we've got to go, you know what? We have to acknowledge that you can't coexist in our world. And that is the reality. But anyway, as we look at, let me get back to, you know, why, you know, what that war in heaven was all about that we read about in, you know, in the scriptures. And again, I'm not really not looking at this in a, you know, trying to save anybody or scriptural type of thing, but the fact of the matter is the scriptures acknowledge the fact that Satan was cast out. And as a matter of fact, in the Garden of Eden, Satan was there, Lucifer. And we were told in, I think it's the Old Testament, that Lucifer was son of the morning. I mean, he was a favored spiritual being. And he was, and we also learned that he is very experienced and very talented with his tongue in deceiving and so forth. And so as we look at the two different ideals, we have to understand that we're living in a world that rejected Satan's, you know, ideas of, you know, following Satan, vice following Christ. And in looking at Christ and his teachings and his life, there was never a point in time where he felt the people had to be compelled, that, you know, we had to live a life of compulsion. You got to remember, the Mosaic law was not an advanced law. It was a fundamental law of do's and don'ts. And so it became an ultimatum type of law that if you don't do this, you get stoned. And so when Christ came along, he said, well, he who is without sin cast the first stone. It changed paradigm. So anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
As you can see, we actually have opposites in almost everything. As a matter of fact, when you look at heavenly bodies, when you look at anything that is emanating light in our galaxy, in our universe, as we look at that light, it actually changes based on its direction. Now, if it's constant and steady with Earth, in other words, it's not shifting in one direction or another, it'll be white. If it's, and I don't know which is which is correct. If it's if it's moving towards us, it is red. And if it's moving away from us, the light has a blue tint to it. And so even in the direction of away and from, the light has a different perception, not even a perception. It actually changes the type of light. And so as we start looking at all these different things, you'll start realizing that the opposites and characteristics are literally opposite. And that's for a reason. You have to understand that there needed to be some form of resistance, temptation, what have you, to life as we live here on planet Earth in this journey of ours to seek the truth, to find the truth, and adhere to the truth. The question is, how is it? I just don't understand how people buy into the lies, other than the fact that the great deceiver is just that good. Anyway, so as you look at the scale of liberty, you will realize that those who are on the side of liberty, they don't believe in any compulsion. So when you start moving away from liberty, that means that you're losing some level of liberty, your opportunity to be able to, do anything and everything and then have the consequences. You got to understand that if you have a law that seems to take away one's liberty, but it really doesn't, it just creates a better environment. And a good example of that is yelling fire in a theater. Now, are you really losing your freedom of expression and freedom of speech by having a law that keeps you from yelling fire in a theater? Well, there better be a fire in the theater, but you still should be, okay, everybody, don't panic. Preface it that way. We need to orderly, get out of here. These are the exits you need to go to. Don't go this way, instead of causing panic. And so we start learning a little bit of how to behave better in, having a governed society. But just because you have a law that, allows, some punishment for your behavior doesn't mean you've lost liberty. When liberty is lost, it means that you're unable to do something. And so let's just look at this current COVID thing, because I think one of the key things that we have lost in liberty is our ability to peaceably assemble, your ability to meet with other people in a public forum or a private forum. They've taken it away. Now, how draconian, how dark is that? Well, it's a fundamental liberty. It's the same thing with your religious expression. When they start imposing, when they start imposing those types of laws upon society and upon us, then we are losing our property. We are losing our rights to be able to express ourselves, our conscience. We're losing our ability to meet and share ideas with others. And that in itself is a big jump on the scale of liberty. Now let's look at the far end, because as you understand, the white end believes that everybody must choose for themselves. Everybody must make their own decisions and be fully accountable and responsible based on the fundamental laws of you drive on this side of the road or what have you. On the opposite end of the scale of liberty, what you have is full compulsion. In other words, there is no tolerance, zero tolerance for making a mistake, zero tolerance for making your own decisions. This is what you will do, and this is how you will do it, and this is when and where you will do it. And either you live by that or they inflict consequences upon you. Arbitrary laws, it is tyranny. And so there's really no order. They may want to tell you, it's based on order. It's really not. It's based on compulsion and control. And so when you look at a person that is on that side, they really don't care what you want to do, what you think you need to do. If they don't want you to do it, you won't do it. And you will suffer the consequences. You don't have any freedom. And so this is kind of where I, you know, back out and I look at, you know, the different doctrines religiously, the different doctrines of, you know, what is a good religious doctrine? What is an evil religious doctrine? Not even just going into saying, oh, only Christianity is a good doctrine. Now, the Buddhists, they kind of have I don't want to say a devil may care, but I mean, they don't compel anybody to become Buddhist. They don't, you know, come after you to kill you if you leave the faith. There's only one faith that I know of that if you leave the faith, the punishment is death in this world, and that would be Islam. And so when you look at Islam and its order and how it lays out these, if you want to call it a caste system, you know, women are, you know, subjugated and lower to men. If you're living by the Quran and the Hadiths. Now, we do see that there's this modern swing where women are given these positions, but I'm here to tell you that once Islam takes its full control and you're living by the Quran and the Hadiths, you will actually see the transformation going the other way. Now, when you have to make, let's just say, appeasements, because, you know, there seems to be social pressures that cause, you know, this lightening up on women, then, you know, see things like Saudi Arabia, because they have to have, and they have to convince the world that they're a lighter, kinder, gentler, you know, form of Islam than the radical side. And so they innovate. So there's these different degrees, but I am telling you, the deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper you get into that world, the, you know, the, if they can do it, they will. And it's the same thing with progressives, and it's the same thing with communism. As you slowly migrate into socialism and surrender some of your liberties, you know, there's still a wall. It's kind of like trapping a pig in the wild. You put up one wall and you put the food there and the pig will come and eat that food and eat that food. And you put up a second wall and over time the pig continues to eat that, you know, food from that space with two walls. You put a third wall up and the pig keeps eating the food. And so when the pig is eating the food with three walls up, that's when you put the fourth wall and it doesn't realize it can't get anywhere anymore. It's same thing with boiling the frog. Same kind of metaphor, same kind of concept. So when you start looking at Islam, there is no way out. But when you look at Christianity, and I will just say religious doctrines that embrace liberty, for the most part, you can change your course at any point in time as an individual. You can get off the path, you can get on the path, you get deeper in the path, and that's all up to you. You're not being compelled to do one thing or another. You have the choice and the freedom and the liberty to be able to make up your own decisions. So those folks on the extreme dark side, they don't, I mean, the worst thing that can happen is you making up your own decisions. Well, who gave you the right to choose for yourself? You know, it is that nefarious. And so one of the things I'm going to get into, and I may have read this not too long ago, you might remember me reading this, but this is a call to the commitment, because this actually gives you visibility to what the communists and how they look at things. Remember, as we start watching communism take over in America because of this Bolshevik Revolution, you'll start realizing that they don't have any tolerance for any opposing ideas. And you will realize that, you know, they don't have to tolerate you because they have control. So you are starting to lose your liberties, and you're already realizing this. This is why. And let me just take this quick aside. There's a reason why the 14th Amendment passed. And I want you to understand, and actually we're going to go into break. So when we come back, I want to actually dive into the 14th Amendment really quick before we get into this call for commitment that Billy Graham had read, this letter from a fiance who went to Mexico that got involved in communism, and it changed his life radically. And so we will be right back after these two promos. And again, what we want to talk about really quick is the 14th Amendment and its protections in context to what the heck is going on with your governor's laws and what the state is doing to you. We will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so when we were going into break, one of the things I wanted to bring up, because it kind of parallels our loss of liberties currently regarding the 14th Amendment. Yeah, as everybody understands, the background on the 14th Amendment was that this was a consequence of the Civil War. Now, most people believe that the Civil War was about secession and whether the states could secede or not. And actually, I clearly point out that states actually can leave the Union when the Union is violating the Constitution. And currently, the federal government is so far outside the boundaries that the only thing that's really going to actually save this union would be an audit and what we call republic review that forces the federal government back into full compliance as well as the states. But the 14th Amendment has nothing to do with secession. And as a matter of fact, nowhere in there does it say anything about secession. It doesn't say that you can't secede. But it does say that you must support the Constitution. Now, there could be, and there is a case, that because the federal government is no longer abiding by the Constitution, there's an argument for secession. However, I believe that that argument isn't between the state and the federal government. that argument is between the state and its fellow states, because you got to understand it's the states who are the shareholders. They're the owners of this compact. They're the ones that have the liability of maintaining compliance by the federal government. And so if a few states step up and say, hey, you know, this is just wrong, they don't have the right to do this, either we fix this or we are leaving. That to me is probably the more palatable way of addressing this. But in all honesty, the palatable way of really addressing this is we have an obligation, like Madison says, to actually engage in this, you know, these evil practices, to arrest them and to force the federal government back into compliance. Now, when we look at the 14th Amendment, so like I said, it doesn't create this law or doesn't affirm that a state can't secede from the union. But it does basically state that we're all supposed to support the Constitution, and when people are violating the Constitution, they're to be removed. Technically, with Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, it would have been applied against those of the aggressive states, not because of secession, but because they were actually making laws that were punishing certain states economically, such as the South. Now, in all honesty, what they needed to do was they needed to go down this path of divorcing themselves from slavery. And so I just believe that the pressures mount to a point where the northern states were violating the Constitution and forced the southern states out. But when we look at the 14th Amendment, what did it really give us as the consequence of the Civil War? It clearly gave us the definition of who is now a citizen. It basically gave the rights of citizenship and of a U.S. citizen, all the rights of a U.S. citizen, to a freeman. And so when you look at, you know, this concept, or actually when you look at what I like to call the citizenship clause of the 14th Amendment, you'll really, you'll find very clearly that the 14th Amendment, you know, identifies one very specific characteristic that required, or actually that was a parameter for citizenship. And it was the wording, the jurisdiction thereof. So in the 14th Amendment, when it says all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Well, hold it. And then it goes on and says, are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. Well, what does that mean? Well, there was a class of people that were slaves that were actually recognized under the jurisdiction of the United States. Why? Because slaves were given an apportionment for representation. And so what they clearly did was they basically said, it doesn't matter if this former slave was born here or was naturalized here. In other words, they were brought here and then brought into that institution of slavery over the past week or two. They all of a sudden become freemen because they basically made them U.S. citizens. With the 13th Amendment, it actually emancipated slavery. But the point is that it clarifies exactly who and what can be a U.S. citizen. And anybody that comes here illegally, while they're still under the jurisdiction of another state and they have not naturalized, in other words, they have not gone through the process of applying and becoming a U.S. citizen, then they're still an alien living amongst us. They're an inhabitant, but they are an illegal alien because they're here violating our laws. And so going through the 14th Amendment, this is the kicker of what this has to do with the scale of liberty. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. When this was actually written and ratified, What that meant is it took away the state's ability to use any form of emergency powers to deny you of these constitutional rights that are identified in the Constitution as well as in the Bill of Rights. I hope you understand what I just said. In other words, the state governors do not have emergency powers that trump this law of the land. The Constitution is the supreme law. Your emergency powers are not supreme to the U.S. Constitution. Now, you can do things, and this is why I wrote this article, The Unknown Teeth, Martial Law in the 21st Century, as well as What is the Real Problem? These three articles work together in basically laying out the argument of what a state can do, what they really can't do. So when a state actually starts taking away your ability to, you know, to have religious expression, your ability to be able to assemble, your ability to be able to, you know, go out into public and mandating all, you know, this carte blanche, taking away everybody's liberty, they can't do that. This is why you need to start getting involved, friends, because the pot is boiling. And you may not be able to jump out, but we've got this lifeline. It's called the Constitution. Just grab a hold and allow the Constitution to bring you to a sanctuary, to a place of freedom once again. When you go through the entire 14th Amendment, you will realize that it had nothing to do with secession. It had everything to do with compliance to the Constitution. And it actually further supported the concept that no one in government has the right to violate the Constitution and take away one your rights or enforce upon you powers and controls that are not delegated. So, moving into, you know what, I forgot to mention this. I have caught up the podcast as of, I think we're all the way up to Monday. We don't have yesterday's podcast up on the site, but if you've been missing a few and you want to, you know, download them, go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to our Red State Talk Radio podcast page, and you'll actually be able to get the shows there. You know, I haven't even gone into the listener drive because I don't necessarily have time. But what I do want to do, and I wanted to get into this commitment, but I realized that we're already out of time to really dive into this. So let me kind of wrap up on the 14th Amendment and what the states are really doing. The states are directly violating and actually passing laws that are rebellious to the Constitution. They're taking away guaranteed rights that you have. This is why in the 14th Amendment, Section 3 states that any public servant who does this, who violates the Constitution and committing rebellion and or giving aid and comfort to those who are are outright directly violating the Constitution. We've got lots of degrees of this. We've got illegal aliens who are violating the Constitution, and we've got public servants that are giving aid and comfort, creating sanctuary cities, sanctuary states, or just giving them aid and comfort at the federal level. Are you kidding? All of these things are violations of the Constitution. This isn't GR's interpretation. This is exactly how the Constitution was defined and set the terms by the framers. So this is why we absolutely have a requirement to call these public servants out. We need to go after them. We need to remove them. And I actually say that you need to go after them in fighting or actually charging them with crimes of treason so that they can be fully accountable for their actions. Now, when you look at the second section of the 14th Amendment, I want you to look at the clarity of apportionment. This is another problem that we have because we're giving apportionment, representation. We're giving representation to illegal aliens. It clearly states in the Section 2 that they have to be legitimate voters and able to vote to be able to have representation. And so there are 26 representatives that are being stolen from states that that actually should have better representation than what they have. Anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so let's get into this commitment, because I read this so that people understand how hardwired those are on the dark side of the scale of liberty. If you want to look at it between left and right, it would be on the left side. But if you want to look at it in regards to the scale of liberty, it doesn't matter what side it's on. It's the black side. It is the side where you don't have the ability to choose. You're on this path, and you will be forced to basically do what we tell you to do. Now, again, this was a letter that was given to Billy Graham. And so here's the precursor. A student at an Eastern university recently went to Mexico, where in the process of time discovering true dedication in some communist workers, he became a communist. Shortly afterward, he wrote his fiance breaking off their engagement. This was the letter given to Billy Graham by a Presbyterian minister at Montreat, North Carolina, when Billy Graham lived. And so basically this is what it says, and this is what he read to his congregation. We communists have a high casualty rate. We're the ones who get shot and hanged and lynched and tarred and feathered and jailed and slandered. We live in virtual poverty. We turn back to the party every penny that we make above what is absolutely necessary to keep us alive. We communists don't have the time or money for any movies or concerts or T-bone steaks or decent homes and new cars. We've been described as fanatics. We are fanatics. Our lives are dominated by one great overshadowing factor, the struggle for world communism. We subordinate our petty personal selves into a great movement of humanity. And if our personal lives seem hard, our egos appear to suffer through subordinate to the party, then we are adequately compensated by the thought that each of us, in his small way, is contributing something new and true and better for mankind. There is one thing in which I am dead earnest, and that is the communist cause. It is my life, my business, my religion, my hobby, my sweetheart, my wife and mistress, my bread and meat. I work at it in the daytime and dream of it at night. It holds on, its hold on me grows, not lessens as time goes by. In other words, it is just magnifying constantly. Therefore, I cannot carry on a friendship, a love affair, or even a conversation without relating to this force which both drives and guides my life. I evaluate people, books, ideas, and actions according to how they affect the communist cause and by their attitude toward it. I've already been in jail because of my ideas, and if necessary, I'm ready to go before a firing squad. This is how committed these folks are. Are you that committed towards liberty? I want you to understand that as we, you know, look at these people on the right and on the left of the scale of liberty, those who embrace full liberty, you have this opportunity to choose. And as a matter of fact, there, in putting this into context with natural law, you have to start recognizing things that are a detriment, things that, and one might look at communism as a, you know, a perfect solution for natural law, but it is not. Because only when liberty is invoked, then everybody has an equal opportunity to be able to become wealthy, successful, or fail. You have just as much right to fail as you do to succeed. And so in the compulsion side, you are going to do what you have to do and you will get it done. You will comply and it doesn't matter. There's, you know, there's no A, B, C, D, or F in grades. You do what you're told. If you don't get it, you'll just keep on doing it until you do get it. But bottom line, you have no choice. And it really boils down to that. When we start looking at what I would consider the things of natural law and the scale of liberty, when a person actually has the opportunity to choose for themselves, the choices they make should be based on what is best. Now, a lot of times we make decisions that aren't very good. Now, and let me look at this in the context of the body and health. Obviously, we know that we're supposed to eat very nutritious foods and for what is best for our body. We learn that, you know, that we shouldn't take in certain things. And as science has progressed, we've learned the causes that tobacco has on the body. We've learned the causes of drugs and alcohol and all the things that we do for quote-unquote recreational purposes have this ill effect. An enlightened person moves beyond the continuance of doing those types of things. And an enlightened person actually does things that is best for their body. It's just like a society. A society that is enlightened does what is best for society, not forcing, but, you know, bringing people along with it. And that's what we saw. There wasn't a force of bringing people along in the United States. Everybody had their freedom to actually get engaged, get educated, and get involved. And those who did, those who actually, you know, were able to, let's just say, I'll use the word exploit the opportunities that were given to them, then they've got this huge success story. What really happens is those people that have those types of success stories, if they're not balanced on natural law, they start trying to pervert and create advantages for themselves and keeping other people out from competition and so forth. Monopolies are not bad. Only when monopolies are protected by government are they bad. I want you to understand that when you start making decisions on what you should do, you know, always consider in society what is best. Is it best that we allow ourselves to chase these indulgences. Everybody that knows that when you overeat, when you eat bad things and you gain weight, then that's not good. There are reasons why there are people that have, you know, weight problems. I mean, I'm a guilty one myself with all of my broken, or I should say, joint problems and everything else. I just can't even move and exercise the way I need to. But with surgeries, I may have a renewed opportunity in getting my hips replaced and so forth. And it sounds like the UN is heading this way. So if the doors get broken down, then you know exactly what's going on. So when you hear these helicopters. Anyway, let me move forward. What we need to start doing is recognizing the importance of natural law. Natural law means that we must be harmonious with those fundamental laws. In other words, those fundamental laws being recognizing property and property rights, recognizing life and the right to life, and protecting those types of things. Abortion is not something that actually fits in with natural law because it's not an advantage. It's not better for society to be able to kill each other. When we start looking at what is really best and what an enlightened society does, an enlightened society starts turning away from the carnal things, the addictive things, the things that we are consumed as a society. I mean, just look at what's happened with COVID. The death rate has gone up for drinking and drug abuse and so forth because nobody has any, you know, people that are already kind of caught up or have a foot in that sandbox where they're already drinking and have a drinking problem. Now that they're home, they're going to drink themselves silly. We have to become, as a society, willing to put aside those things that are harmful and start stepping up towards the things that we need to do. They may be difficult, you know, but an adult does what is necessary for the betterment of society. And it's not to take people by edict and kill them. That's what's coming around the corner. With Bolshevik revolutions, that's exactly what they do. Everybody can contribute, but we have to get everybody into a position where they are self-sufficient. Welfare systems create dependencies and does not develop self-sufficiency. We have to actually change our paradigms and going back towards the Enlightenment era, where we actually have a symbiotic relationship with religious organizations. And I've said this before, the real mistake as we started moving towards a secular society was not forcing the godless, those who had a godless paradigm that didn't want to have a religion, well, then create your own community organization based on your doctrine, but don't force it upon all of us. And there you have how evil starts compelling people, because next thing you know, they tell you, well, I don't believe in this. And then around the corner comes, well, you have to, you know, not do those things, to where eventually you must believe, you must be a part of this. It is an evil cycle, friends. And so this is why we want to kind of help you understand the importance in dovetailing natural law along with the scale of liberty and where we need to go from here. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.